With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. An app from UC Davis researchers can help farmers gather crop data. A new web application could help farmers get more out of drones used to gather data on farms. The Win to Fly app, developed by University of California Davis researchers, aims to help drone operators on farms steer clear of glare-like areas called hotspots that can tamper with the data drones collect. Creators of the app, Alezra Pereza, an associate professor and postdoctoral researcher, Hamid Jafarbiglu, says the technology can help growers allocate their resources more efficiently in managing water use or applying nitrogen. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report. And now let's get into today's show headlines. California fairgrounds get funding for infrastructure. The California Department of Food and Agriculture has announced $89 million in funding toward renovations to state fairgrounds through its Fairground and Community Resiliency Centers program. The funds were granted through the state budget and will primarily improve fairgrounds' ability to safely shelter evacuees and emergency responders. It will also enhance the fairgrounds' emergency preparedness capabilities. These upgrades include safe shelters, kitchens, sanitation facilities, showers, livestock barns, new HVAC systems, and even new event centers. In addition, CDFA's Fairs and Exposition Branch announced earlier this week that $38 million in grants will be awarded to fairgrounds with projects that have a focus on community-based aspects. CDFA Secretary Karen Ross says, quote, "This program is a prime example of the value of California fairgrounds. These grants will provide more than 460,000 square feet of new space for emergency sheltering, and they will position fairgrounds to offer their communities additional resources during climate-related disasters or other emergencies. The enhanced fairgrounds will also provide a unique opportunity for their communities to engage in the use of facilities for other services and activities throughout the entire year." A total of 12 projects were granted funding. The projects are located in Butte, Tulare, Kings, Amador, Shasta, San Bernardino, Merced, Los Angeles, Sacramento, Siskiyou, Santa Cruz, and Placer counties. Before we get into more of the day's agriculture news, I'd like to remind you that registration is currently open for the Organic Growers Summit presented by Western Growers and the Organic Produce Network. This year, attendees will get to experience the sold-out OGS trade show floor that will feature soil amendments, ag tech, food safety, packaging, and equipment exhibitors. And they'll have an opportunity to connect with organic field production staff, supply chain managers, pest management advisors, and food safety experts. And now for more agriculture news, here's Brian German.
Coordinated policy efforts on behalf of the specialty crop industry as a whole has helped make progress in farm bill representation. President and CEO of California Citrus Mutual, Casey Kramer, said there's been positive momentum for addressing specialty crop issues as the industry continues to further unify.
I don't think we're going to get everything that we asked for, that's for darn sure. But if you go back multiple farm bills ago and just the diversity of the specialty crop industry, we all have different needs and wants and interests. And all of those things were done in a fashion that were uncoordinated. And it minimized our ability to get things done in Washington, D.C., and particularly related to the farm bill. And so I think what you see is each farm bill, the specialty crops, is, you know, when they work together and develop priorities and find the things that benefit the most, we tend to have a little bit more weight in the conversations back in D.C. So I think that's growing. I'm not going to tell you that the specialty crop industry is driving overall ag policy. I don't believe it's there yet, but it is growing and becoming a stronger unit. And I think as long as we continue to work together, it'll continue to get stronger into the future.
The new Organic Livestock and Poultry Standards Regulation was recently finalized. Organic poultry producer and chair of the National Organic Standards Board, Nate Powell-Palm, said the new organic standards will help producers and consumers.
And my customers, when they come to visit my farm, get to see that my hens have consistent outdoor access, they scratch and peck in the soil, and they live a life with dignity. And now, because of this rule, I can point to this rule to spell out how my hens are not unique in the organic market. All organic hens are raised with the highest animal welfare because of the publication of this rule. Every carton of eggs carrying the USDA organic seal in every store across the whole country presents a one-stop shop for consumers now to get both the cleanest food and food raised with the highest animal welfare.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
We want everyone to breathe clean, healthy air, but California's traffic and mountains don't make it easy. Our mountains trap pollution, making us more vulnerable to dirty air. Today's farmers are voluntarily doing their part with help from USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service. How? By replacing older diesel-powered tractors and equipment, treating dusty farm roads, avoiding open burning, and more. Can't afford it? NRCS has invested $178 million helping California farmers clean our air. They can help you too. NRCS, helping people help the land since 1935.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, low water levels on the Mississippi River have slowed barge traffic and reduced loading capacity this harvest season, leading to similar delays and increased costs experienced by the grain industry last year. Ben Doan, manager of barge freight at CHS Global Grain and Processing, says the industry was taken by surprise last year.
There were overloaded barges loaded to 10 to 11 feet that physically just could not transit. So as a result of those barges, hundreds of barges getting left behind, we were congesting fleets at really the worst part of the year during gut slot harvest in the Delta.
He says the barge traffic was shut down entirely during the harvest for 2 weeks last year due to low water levels. In response, the Army Corps of Engineers this past summer undertook several dredging operations to avoid a similar situation this harvest season.
And that's exactly what happened. 2023, fast forward the clock to this past September, October, and lightning struck twice, but the industry was just a lot more well-prepped. There were a lot less overloaded barges in the system because the industry was very mindful of what had just happened. And we loaded barges a little bit more conservatively. And the main thing was we were just a lot more well-prepared from a dredging perspective. Now, we did deal with intermittent closures, and we did deal with groundings and closures that lasted up to a couple days, but we avoided the full two-week closure.
Thanks to the recent rainfall in the Mississippi River Basin, he says we are coming out of this, which is good news.
We have had recent rainfall sweep across the Midwest, which has really been favorable for water levels in the U.S. So we're certainly not out of it, not out of the woods by any stretch of the word, but we're trending in the right direction in terms of water levels. Now, we do need consistent rainfall going forward to ultimately stabilize and sustain water levels to more optimal operating conditions where these lower miss shippers can execute, 12-foot drafts. We're not there yet.
While the situation has improved compared to last year, Doan says barge delays still exist.
You know, when we're loading multi-commodity ships and you're waiting for a certain commodity, but every day it's a very hand-to-mouth environment right now because of the delays that we're seeing and the intermittent closures that we're seeing on the riverways. So absolutely seeing that. And when that happens, exporters are paying demurrage on boats and you're not optimizing your program and you're not taking your programs to the capacity that you would otherwise hope for. And you could maybe recover for that if you had strong Gulf margins, but that's also not the environment that we're in, just with the surplus of stocks globally due to South America.
He says the current barge transit times on the Mississippi River are 5 to 7 days longer than normal due to the low water levels.
St. Paul to the Gulf, you load a barge in St. Paul, it takes over 3 weeks for that barge movement to execute all the way from St. Paul to the New Orleans region. And it takes about a month to get a fertilizer load from New Orleans up to St. Paul. But the takeaway here is the needle really can move on these barge movements. And the standard deviation on a barge movement is very, very wide. So I'll give you an example. Back in 2022, when we were seeing that unprecedented low water event, these transit times quite often would double and even maybe triple out of St. Louis to the Gulf, just because of the large lead times that we were seeing, because the industry was physically not able to transit a barge. It did have a huge impact in 2023, but not quite the same as it did in 2022. So major standard deviation, but these are typical transit times to perform barge movements in the United States.
Doan was a guest of the NCI Market Update Special Edition webinar series this Wednesday.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, both ends of the nation's pasture and rangeland condition ratings reveal year-over-year improvements within the final condition report for 2023. With more on that, here's Rod Bain.
The numbers from the final U.S. pasture and rangeland conditions report for the year reveal...
Nationally, we finished the year with one-third of the nation, 33%, reporting good to excellent ratings on the pasture and rangeland. Compared to last year at this time, as we finished up, that is a 10 percentage point improvement from last year's 23%.
While USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey adds for the very poor-to-poor condition rating to close out 2023...
37% is our season-ending number. That is down considerably from last year's season ending 48% very poor to poor.
Despite the year-over-year improvements in overall pasture and rangeland conditions, Rippey says there are still some regions of concern. For instance,
one area of greatest concern is across the Deep South, coming off that hot and dry summer,
as well as parts of the Western Corn Belt and the Pacific Northwest. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. And USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey looks at states with notable good to excellent pasture and rangeland conditions for the period that ended this past week.
We do see those numbers coming in here at the end of the season, at least 50% good to excellent in quite a long list of states, including the Dakotas, Nebraska, Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, and Nevada, and then several states from the Ohio Valley into the Northeast, just to name a few: New York, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Ohio. And then if you go to the Southeast, Florida did a little better than some of the other states in terms of summer moisture, coming in at the end of the year 50% good to excellent on Florida's pastures.
And Rippey also discusses regions of the country where there are concerns about pasture and rangeland conditions.
There's still some problem areas to talk about across the Deep South, from places like Arizona all the way eastward to the Central Gulf Coast. We finished the year with at least 60% of the rangeland and pastures rated very poor to poor in Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. And as we move to the north, several states finishing the year at least 50% very poor to poor, stretching from Kansas to Missouri and then on eastward to South Carolina. And then finally, parts of the Western Corn Belt still trying to recover from this summer's drought. Minnesota ends the year 52% very poor to poor. And in the Northwest, we are at 69% very poor to poor in Washington State, 50% in Oregon.
Again, that was USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey. And a quick reminder, the National Dairy Herd Information Association is accepting applications for $1,500 scholarships. They'll go to third or fourth year college of veterinary medicine students. If you'd like more information about this, simply go to dhia.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
You're listening to Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
You're invited to the Federal Urban Agriculture Committee meeting. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. Members of the Urban Agriculture and Innovative Production Advisory Committee will meet this month. This is the committee's seventh meeting and is scheduled for November 29th. The 2018 Farm Bill directed USDA to create the committee to advise the Agriculture Secretary on developing policies and outreach related to urban, indoor, and other emerging agricultural production practices, as well as identify any barriers to urban agriculture. The committee is one of several ways that USDA is extending support and building frameworks to support urban agriculture, including issues of equity, climate resilience, and nutrition access. The members represent a diverse set of expertise, including urban production, innovative production, higher education, nonprofit, finance, business and economic development, supply chain, and other areas related to urban, indoor, and other emerging agricultural production practices. The public is invited to attend virtually by registering on the USDA website. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCullen. If you're thinking about selling grain or livestock this fall and deferring payment, make sure you do it right to get the tax deferral that you want. There are rules that must be followed. To defer income from the sale of grain or livestock, a deferred payment contract must be structured properly to prevent an IRS claim that you constructively received the income, even though you didn't actually receive it in the year of sale. There are three key points. Don't have the sale income credited to your account. Make sure the buyer doesn't set it apart for you. And make sure that you can't access the funds. A properly drafted deferred payment contract can satisfy these requirements. Under this type of deferral contract, the price of the goods is set at the specified time for delivery, but payment is deferred until the next year. Also, make sure you don't have any right to demand payment until the following year. The contract, as well as the sale proceeds, must also be non-assignable, non-transferable, and non-negotiable. If structured in this manner, the deferral should not be challenged by the IRS. If it turns out you don't want or need to defer, just report the income in the year of sale. But remember next year that you did that so that you don't report the income twice. Also remember that you're unsecured until you get paid. That's a problem if the buyer files bankruptcy between the times for delivery and payment. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCullen.
We are out here at good old Veg U at the Department of Agriculture's Farmers Market in Washington, D.C. We hopefully are going to get some veg-ucation. But instead of getting the lesson first and then give you the quiz, we're going to do it backwards. So it's quiz time. All right. Thank you. Thank you. Here's the quiz, Diz. What food item are we talking about? And here are the clues. One. For hundreds of years, people thought this food was deadly poison because it belonged to the nightshade family of plants. Clue two, Thomas Jefferson grew this food at his farm. And the last clue, the true identity of this food was the centerpiece of a legal case that went all the way to the Supreme Court. What food is it? Professors, the answer is...
Tomatoes,
that's right. Of course, they ought to know they are our veggieucators today. Nikita Vivekanandan and Tomi Algerboy, both with the Ag Department's Marketing Service. Tomi, you were ready with another clue for the quiz. What was that?
Tomatoes are the most widely grown vegetable in the United States, but it's a fruit.
Not a vegetable?
They're technically a fruit.
But there may be some legal objections to that. Let's go back to the year 1883. Congress passes a tax on all vegetables that are coming into the U.S. from other countries. No tax on imported fruits. John Nix there is a food importer. He sues the Port of New York and its tax guy, Mr. Hedden, for all the tax that Nix has paid over the years on the tomatoes he had imported. Well, in this case, in 1893, it goes all the way to the Supreme Court. How did it come out?
The Supreme Court ruled that tomatoes were considered vegetables.
What?
Whoa, wow. That caused quite a stir. Who knows? Maybe, though, they'll revisit that issue. But I guess it's good that the court ruled tomatoes as vegetables in one way. Otherwise, you guys, Tomi and Nikita, would be fruiticators. And this would be good old fruit you. That doesn't sound right, does it? No. Speaking of sounding, tomatoes have been caught up in another identity issue involving pronunciation. And you know the drill here.
You like tomato, and I like tomato. Tomato, tomato. Oh, let's call the whole thing off.
So you don't say tomato.
I personally don't, but to each their own.
Okay, all right. I'm going to call them what we used to call them down home, just maters, as in I'm going to pick me a mess of maters. So as far as picking maters, tomatoes, tomatoes, anyway, picking them at the store or at a farmer's market, Nikita, what is your advice for that?
You do want to have a tomato that is somewhat firm. If you're feeling any soft, squishy spots, it's probably a sign that the tomato is overripe and starting to go bad.
As to what to do with those tomatoes when you get them home, Nikita?
You do not want to put them in the fridge. If you do, they're going to lose their texture, their flavor, so you want to keep them at room temperature.
All right. Next time, we're going to take a look at the nutritional aspects of tomatoes and give you an idea for a little something different to do with tomatoes. majors. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
What a difference a week makes on Wall Street. I'm Mark Oppold with today's bottom line report brought to you by Kloss Equipment and AgriLiquid. Be sure your crop nutrition plan is ready to go next spring with great products like Pro Germinator, Micro 500, and Capitalize. Visit agriliquid.com. A week ago today, the Dow closed 32,780 and looked to breach 32,000 for the first time since mid-May. Well, here we are a week later at three-week highs, targeting 34,000. That would be the first time since September 25th. Much of the recent bullishness centered on the Federal Reserve. 80% say there will be no interest rate hike at the December 13th meeting. 75% say there won't be one in January. And today, the CME Group FedWatch shows 70% think interest rate hikes are over. Now, all of this is not transferred to the grain trade, but bottom line analysts add it could support a sluggish meat trade going forward if consumers feel more confident about the economy. This is the bottom line report. Harvest with confidence with the Kloss Treon 740 Combine, a Class 7 machine with cutting-edge features. Take a closer look at Kloss.com. That's our bottom line. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day.
And in more agriculture news, the Department of Agriculture is accepting applications for the Emergency Relief Program for eligible farms impacted by natural disasters last year. Here's Michael Clements with the report.
USDA recently announced disaster-related funding for events that occurred in 2022 through the Emergency Relief Program. American Farm Bureau Federation economist Danny Munch explains.
The new ERP program is a continuation of the previous ERP, which covered qualifying losses from 2021 and 2020. This new one will add an additional $3.74 billion in ad hoc assistance for disasters that occurred in 2022.
The application process includes two separate tracks for farmers.
Track one is going to be for farmers who already have had an active crop insurance plan in 2022 or an active NAP plan 2022. So those folks will receive a pre-filled application with their information. Just because you receive a pre-filled application doesn't mean you'll get payments. You still have to qualify. Track two will cover all other folks, and that's going to use a benchmark revenue from your farm and compare it to your disaster year, either from your tax returns or an expected revenue.
However, the payment formula, Munch says, may be problematic for many farmers.
It looks at your original coverage level in your crop insurance plan, and it bumps it up. So for instance, if you had 55% coverage level, now you have 80. The new piece is it takes that base payment, and then it uses what's called progressive factoring, where the first $2,000, you'll get to keep all of that. The next $2,000 is decreased by 20%, the next 40%. Once you get over $10,000, everything after that is reduced by 90%. And that's a big impact because a lot of farmers that face disasters have losses much higher than $10,000.
For more information, contact your local Farm Service Agency office. Michael Clements, Washington.
President Biden is putting a focus on rural America. President Biden visited a Minnesota farm and took the opportunity to outline some federal investments in farmers and rural communities. He talked about the pressures that farmers and rural communities are under.
Over the past four decades, we lost over 400,000
400,000 farms in America, 400,000, over 141 million acres of farmland. And that's an area roughly equal to the size of Minnesota, North and South Dakota combined, the three. Facing higher costs and earning less, family farms have struggled. And when family farms go by the wayside, small businesses, hospitals, schools that support them, they suffer as well in the community. And as a result, farmers and ranchers and rural business owners, including scores of young people, have to leave home.
I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
If you are an organic livestock or poultry producer, you've been waiting quite a while, a long time, for the USDA to craft a set of national regulations that would govern the conditions under which certified organic livestock and poultry would be raised. But the wait is over. USDA has just published the final rules.
This is the most significant update in organic regulations in over 30 years.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack unveiling the new rules for reporters. The set of rules has less to do with what producers feed their animals, what medicines can be used on them and such, more to do with how the animals are cared for. For example,
it establishes minimum outdoor space requirements and ready access to outdoors for livestock and poultry. The rule carries forward indoor and outdoor living condition requirements, sufficient space for animals to move freely. Bedding, it is in a large area, comfortable and hygienic. So specific density for poultry requirements.
When these rules take full effect, producers won't be able to market their products as certified organic unless they meet those humane care standards. And so,
this rule makes organic the gold standard for animal care.
Nate Powell Palm is a Montana organic producer, chair of the National Organic Standards Board. He told us most organic producers realize these new rules will boost interest in and sales of their organic products.
Everybody wants it. Farmers want it. Consumers want it. Organic certifiers want it. It provides excellent consistency so that everyone knows that all producers raising organic livestock are doing it in the same exceptionally high-quality environment.
Several farm groups have praised the rules. Also, there's been praise from lawmakers, including Maine Representative Shelley Pingree.
The USDA and others are doing so much, importantly, to encourage organic farmers, knowing that organic farming in many ways is the ultimate in climate-smart agriculture, because the soil is such a significant part in increasing organic matter and so many of the practices really enhance the kinds of things we're trying to do for good practices for the environment. It really makes a huge difference that this particular rule is moving forward and being finalized.
The new rule will take effect in about 14 months, but producers will have up to 5 years to make whatever changes to facilities that may be needed in order to comply and to be certified as organic. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Why do you listen?
Anytime I'm talking to a friend about new music and I don't know what it is, it's probably because they were listening to radio and I wasn't.
I'm nosy. I like to know what's going on, and radio usually is right there telling me what and when is going on and where it's going on.
Well, listen in the barn, skid loader, tractor, then just about anywhere you can.
When you put the lights on the barn, the radio went on.
Why do you listen? Go to whyilisten.com, tell us why you listen, and you have a chance to win $500. Visit whyilisten.com today.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
The Organic Grower Summit is coming up on November 29th and 30th, and we're joined by event manager Keegan Roos this morning to talk a little bit about the event. And so let's just start out here with a little bit of history on the event and what's in store this year.
Yes, this is the sixth annual OGS. The first one was in 2017. So we're excited for this year's event. We're hoping it's going to be, you know, our biggest and best event yet. And it's going to be held November 29th and 30th at the Hyatt Regency Monterey Hotel and Spa in Monterey, California. And so it's a two-day event, and we have a sold-out trade show floor. We have exhibitors anywhere from soil amendment companies to ag tech, food safety, packaging, equipment exhibitors, and they'll all be connecting with organic field production staff, supply chain managers, pest management advisors, and food safety experts. We have some great ed sessions planned this year, some great speakers that will be at the event, discussing, you know, the strengthening organic enforcement rule that's coming up, that compliance deadline. We have some sessions on regenerative farming and what that means for organic. We're going to be talking about the value of AI, as well as sustainable pest management, and some going over obstacles and opportunities in relation to using ag tech.
So very cool, very robust program there, covering quite a few different subjects. And along with the trade show, there's also an award that's given out, and that was recently announced, wasn't it?
Correct. Yeah, we announced that our annual Grower of the Year award will be awarded to Rod Braga from Braga Fresh. We're really excited to award him this Grower of the Year award and have him at OGS. Just to kind of honor his decades work, you know, in farming and organics, and all the success that he's brought to California agriculture.
Very cool. And now, since this is kind of all things organic, what's the general target audience, or who might benefit the most from coming in and checking out what the event has to offer?
Yeah, definitely. We, you know, organic growers of any acreage and size. We're just looking for organic growers and producers who are looking to, you know, gain some knowledge about organic farming, some of the hot topics, and looking to meet with their supply chain and service providers.
Very cool. And along with the panels, I mean, there's several networking opportunities, so it seems like a good opportunity to shake hands and have those important conversations with other industry members there as well.
That's correct. Yeah, we have a lot of networking opportunities built into the schedule. One that we're really excited about this year that we've kind of revamped is our opening reception, making that more of a picnic / tailgate, more of like a networking fun event compared to your traditional opening receptions. And we will also be expanding our ag tech and innovation area this year. This is going to be an area for different companies to promote their ag technology or equipment during the event. It'll be a larger footprint area, which is going to flow right into the opening reception, where people can network and get to know other people around these machines and equipment, and should just make for a really fun end of the first day.
Thanks, Brian, and stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
What GMO crops are grown and sold in the U.S.? Well, there's corn, like me, soybeans, canola, sugar beets, and cotton. Typically, we're ingredients in certain foods. GMO alfalfa, corn, soybeans, canola, and cotton are used as animal food. And while you won't find many GMOs in the produce section, there are versions of GMO apple, summer squash, potato, and papaya in a few markets. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
A new program aims to address groundwater depletion in California through incentivizing managed aquifer recharge. A study by UC Santa Cruz and UC Berkeley researchers published in Nature Water last month introduces recharge net metering, or RENEM. It functions like a reward system for individuals who allow groundwater recharge on their property. They get paid based on the amount of water their project adds back to the aquifer. This method aims to overcome challenges like the cost of land and variable infiltration conditions. The case study in the Pajaro Valley demonstrates how the program can be implemented successfully. The Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency oversees the program, landowners facilitate projects, and a third-party certifier helps assess and monitor the projects. Over 25 years, the RENAM program is expected to generate a substantial amount of water at a lower cost compared to other methods. The benefits are distributed between the agency managing groundwater, those hosting the projects, and the overall basin. Program success depends on various factors like the amount of water infiltrated, the cost of water, and the duration of the projects. Adjusting certain factors can change who benefits more, making it adaptable to different situations. However, some of the challenges include dealing with the uncertainties of hydrological conditions. Overall, RENAM appears to be a promising solution as a flexible, incentive-based approach to addressing groundwater recharge. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
The U.S. to participate in the next Indo-Pacific Framework Negotiation Round. A delegation of trade officials from the U.S. Trade Representative's Office will participate in the 7th in-person negotiating round of the Indo-Pacific Economic Framework for Prosperity. The negotiations are planned for November 5th through the 12th in San Francisco, California. In San Francisco, the IPEF partners will continue to make progress on negotiations toward high-standard outcomes under the pillars of trade, clean economy, and fair economy. The U.S. interagency delegation will be co-led by Sarah Ellerman, IPEF Pillar Assistant United States Trade Representative for Southeast Asia and the Pacific, and Sharon H. Yan, U.S. Department of Commerce Counselor. The framework will offer tangible benefits that fuel economic activity and investment, promote sustainable and inclusive economic growth, and benefit workers and consumers across the region. That's according to the USTR. The first round of negotiations were held in Brisbane, Australia, in December of last year, with other rounds taking place earlier this year. NAFB contributed to that report. Last month, AgNet West Brian German caught up with some of our friends during the CAPCA conference. Here's his conversation with folks at Corteva.
My name is Daniel Abruzzini. I'm the Western Marketing Manager for Corteva.
And you have got a new product that's just got some federal registration pretty recently. So let's kind of get into that and how that's going to work.
Yeah, so Celebra just got federal registration in September, and we're waiting for California registration sometime in 2024. It's a new plant parasitic, controlled plant parasitic nematodes. And it's going to be a new option for growers to use. It's going to be easy to use. I'm going to be able to put it out through the irrigation. And the nice thing is that it only targets plant parasitic nematodes. So all the soil microbes and for soil health, it's great for that benefit, just because it only affects the plant parasitic nematodes. And then also we target the key nematodes and all the crops that we're going to be registered on. So like lesion, dagger, root knot, and a lot of the major ones that affect the crops, it's going to be really big for controlling those products.
And for that, you touched on it a little bit, but what kind of value can that provide of being specific? Like, I'd like to get into the details of why that can be advantageous to growers.
Yeah, there's not a lot of options right now for people to use, especially in season. And so, for nematodes, they can be pretty damaging to the crop. And something that people don't notice because it's under the ground, so they can't visually see it. So it's something that, there's not a lot of options, and so this provides a new option for growers to use in season or pre-plant, but it's a new option for guys to look at for nematode control.
And you noted that it's a pretty wide umbrella in terms of crops that you're looking at. I'd like to get into the list of that just so some of those growers can, put this on their radar here looking into next year.
Yeah, absolutely. So right off the bat, we're going to be targeting non-bearing tree nut and vine crops. And then also we're going to be targeting cucurbits, fruiting veg, and then potatoes and carrots are going to be our main focus. And then there'll be a second wave of registrations as well. So that's when our bearing labels will come in. So that'll be in the upcoming years as well. So there'll be another wave of additional crops that'll come in as well. So.
And you noted in season or off season, is that going to be crop dependent, I would assume? I mean, what's going to be some of the application types and timelines there?
Yeah, so with like tree crops or like tree nut and vine, those are going to be probably 30 days after application, right when during root flush. So they'll go out during the through the irrigation during their first irrigation runs. And then with like fruiting veg and some of those other crops, that can be done in furrow or it can be done through the drip, just depending on what's easy for the grower.
And just lastly here, while it's not quite registered in California, when that does come through, what's going to be the best way to get some information on that, or who do they need to contact?
Yeah, you know, I'd just reach out. You go to Corteva.us/Celebra, or you can reach out or go to our regular website and just find a rep within California or the West. So,
CropLife America announces a CEO search. The CropLife America Board of Directors is opening the search for the organization's next president and chief executive officer. CropLife America is the national trade association representing the manufacturers, formulators, and distributors of plant science solutions for agriculture and pest management in the United States. Their president and CEO will be important in maintaining and enhancing existing member relationships. The successful candidate will have strong leadership skills, experience in regulated industry, and advocacy with a broad array of stakeholders, including elected officials and regulators at both a federal and state level. The organization's members are deeply committed to their businesses, and the CEO must demonstrate a shared belief in and commitment to furthering the interests of the industry. The board retained Kincannon and Reed to help guide the nationwide search process. CropLife America parted ways with former CEO Chris Novak back in September. A statement from CropLife America at the time said, quote, "The entire CLA board of directors thanks Chris for his service to the organization over the past 5 years." And AFP contributed to that report.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.